You are listening to Chaos Springs Eternal, a Delta Green actual play, brought to you by Quartermasters of the Tabletop. This is Season 1, City of Woe. Delta Green, by its nature, deals with violent themes and disturbing imagery, as well as horrors beyond our comprehension. Now, if you're one of those people who don't mind comprehending some horrors from time to time, I think you'll have a good time listening here. Join us, won't you? Hey, what's going on? It's Dan. Just popping in at the top of this episode to say, this one might come with a little bit of a trigger warning. We get a little creepy and weird. There's some body horror and some other imagery that might be extra disturbing this week, so just a heads up. I do think it is still worth listening to, so give it a try. Welcome back to Chaos Springs Eternal. This is Season 1, City of Woe, and we've got a hot one today for our top of the episode question, which I saw on Reddit, and the person who posted this said that it was responsible for the destruction of multiple friend groups, which is how you know it's a good question.
Yep.
Which is, if a vampire was a cop and he had a warrant, is he allowed to enter the house? Drench, you are a most wise member. What do you think?
That's a nice way to say eldest member.
Yes. Oh, yes, Mark, you're old. You're old as shit. What do you think?
I'm old as fuck. Yeah.
Tell me, Grandpa.
I would say no.
Just have an ass.
I would say no. He's not allowed to enter.
We got one vote for no. Do you want to give a little supporting statement to that?
So I think that in terms of vampire lore, you need to be invited into the home by the person whose home it is. And technically, the municipality, that is not their home. And so while they may have the authority to enter a house, they do so uninvited most of the time. And so they can say, well, I'm going into your house, but you've not been invited into the house, which is why I don't think it would work.
Okay, so you advocate...
Anne Rice wrote a whole novel on this, by the way.
She wrote the police cop vampire novel?
Yeah.
Interesting. So you advocate not paying taxes to the government because they don't own your home. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm saying that home is where your heart is.
Okay, so...
I'm saying that, though.
Legally, a vampire can't even bite you unless you invite them.
Right. So they cannot enter the house.
Tyler, I can feel you wanting to share more, please.
Yeah, I do actually. So first off, as we all know, bro, if you're a cop or sorry, if you're a vampire, legally you have to tell me. But I agree with Drench or Mark 100%. I feel like it probably is a bit of the idea of those whose domicile it is the one who has to be the one inviting them. Like, if someone's knocking at a door and then, like, your neighbor's like, oh yeah, you can go inside, like, vampire can't come in. But I think this gets into a weird gray area where if you're living in, like, some, like, government-assisted living kind of stuff, you know, where, like, technically the government does own that building, I wonder if that's when it kicks in.
Again, I think this is, we're not taking into account the Georgist approach to property.
Yeah, because we aren't full on assholes.
I'm gonna expand on what Tyler just said. When in like the United States of America, where regretfully I believe we all live currently, when you buy a home, generally you have to buy it through a loan, because who the fuck out here as a real human being has like hundreds of thousands of dollars and isn't a fucking psychopath?
That's true.
Or a vampire themselves.
That's true.
Or
every time
owns an emerald mine. One of their family owns an emerald mine. In when you buy that house, you buy the right to it from a bank, and banks are owned by the government, right?
Well,
no. So banks are their own thing.
It's more like banks and the government are involved in a weird sort of Ouroboros of
they're in a They're in a menage a trois Sunday.
Yeah, but basically they own the house. They own the house, not you.
Yeah.
You own so you the have, right to live in the house and have stuff done to the house.
Banks and government are double teaming you for the house.
So basically, if a vampire is living or unliving in a judicial system where he can get a warrant for the house from the government that works hand in hand with the bank who owns the house, that motherfucker can get in. I'm not saying you can't stake him. Stake the shit out of him. Of course. Fuck the cops. Especially vampiric ones.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
So we've so far it sounds like we've got two no's and Noah, you're coming out with yes.
I'm coming out with yes.
Would you need to hold on a second? Would you need to get the permission of the bank in order to enter the house? Or are you saying that it's a cooperation between the banks and the government?
You say permission of the bank. Are you talking board of directors? Are you talking the CEO? Are you talking to stockholders? Do we need to hold a vote on this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm saying they just give a writ permission. Just like, yep.
Just like any bank teller can be like, blanket permission.
Go get in that house.
I think it's the individual who owns the house. And under federal law, corporations are individuals. They are entities. So he has to get corporation, the idea of the company to give him access inside the house.
I'm saying when we live in a system that vampires can hold occupations, that they'll probably design a system where it's just like, in the case of a vampire cop, they'll just have writ permission at large to go into homes that are technically owned by a subsidiary of the government or so on and so forth. That it'll just be like, they can just fucking barge in. It's fucked. It's super fucked. It's horrible.
Noel really did just hit us with we live in a society just now.
We do live in a society. Here's my thing. I don't think that vampires are actually... I think the constraint about permission is a trick by vampires.
That's what I was just about to say!
I thought you were just about to go, vampires aren't real.
What if everything we know about vampires is a psyop? That's exactly what I was going to mention.
If I was an eternally living, creature of the night, I would totally be like, yes, we can't go out in sunlight. Oh, no garlic, please. No crosses. They'll protect you. I wouldn't if you use bullets, they have to be silver because it costs money. And no way you're going to waste money on something that could actually hurt me,
I'm weak to having $100 stacks of bills thrown at me. Oh, no.
Oh, no. You don't have to lock your doors. We can't even go in if we don't have permission. So the vampires are just screwing with us.
They're just negging us.
We can't even see ourselves in the mirror.
Oh, you're so ugly. I don't want to have sex with you.
You have a very Italian vampire, Mark.
I do. I didn't realize how Italian Giuliano. My vampire would be. I apologize to anyone I have offended with my Italian accent.
Now, are you worried about offending vampires or Italians there?
Both.
More specifically, the Italian vampires.
Fuck Chef Boyardee. You're an ethically compromised vampire.
Chef Boyardee.
Is he Italian or I thought he was French?
Yeah. No. So, do Italians need permission?
Oh my god.
No. Anyways.
No, that is not true. I live in a place with enough Italians. There's nothing required.
Okay.
Than I want
just to throw another wrench in the system. Okay. When you get a mortgage on a home, you are the owner of that home. The bank and the mortgage company, they own interest in that home. So they have an interest in what happens to it, but legally under our court system, you are the owner of that home as long as you are fulfilling the terms of your mortgage.
And given that vampires are old and rich, they probably have an interest in the vampire taking over the home.
Right.
So that they're going to be better about paying the mortgage.
So they may be entering their own home. They may the home.
Hang on. One more wrench. Engine. One more wrench. I know I said this was the last one.
We got a whole box of wrenches.
We have infinite bags and infinite cats if we do
infinite
this.
Infinite wrench works.
What if you rent?
No.
If you rent, absolutely not, right?
Right. Yeah.
So here's the thing. Landlords, secretly saving you.
Oh my god, yeah, you could say, yeah, you can come in. The vampire just hits a fucking wall and you're like, that's a fucking brick idiot. Wall.
Don't give landlords any more reason to be a dick. Well,
yeah.
Rent had to go up.
That idea.
It's a $2,000 vampire fee.
Here's what happened. Here's why you don't hear about vampire hunters anymore. They all became landlords because it makes them way more money.
Oh my god.
Yep.
Speaking of cops, we had a little run-in with Detective Marr more two episodes ago, but a little bit of last episode, he sort of spilled the beans to the nurses about the missing Antoine Babineau. One of the nurses mentioned Antoine's girlfriend, Chelsea, that she had given a statement but had not heard from him. And then y'all got results back from Marcy's x-ray after a just failed luck check. You definitely had some fractured ribs, wanted to keep you overnight, maybe a couple days.
My bones.
Yes. Your bone hurting juice. You took too much of it. And Marcy and the doctor had a very interesting conversation about bowling, including I just listened to that. The guy who slipped and threw the ball up and squished his own head. That tickled me when I heard about that.
I forgot I said that.
Y'all asked Clementine, the one with a job that has a deadline, to stay with Marcy. But then you kind of seated and Joel and Marcy. Well, you distributed the video that you had taken to everyone. And then Clementine and Joel went back to the Daily Gator while Marcy and Cyril watched the footage as well in a sort of cool split screen that I described. And even though for the first bit of the footage, you only saw like orbs and poorly framed things in that last bit when you were looking up, through the hole, y'all saw the ghostly face of Marguerite. Y'all all passed the sanity checks, and Joel decided to head home while Cyril and Marcy stayed overnight. And as Joel headed home, he suddenly decided to turn around and go to the manor, which I was not expecting, but is I thought was a very cool decision on Tyler's part. Thank you for giving me that gift.
No problem. Now I can't wait for Joel to die.
So, and the last thing that we saw was pulling up from the view of Joel's car to the top window where we saw Marguerite looking out on his 350Z. Clearly she wanted a chance to drive it. So as we move back into the town of Carrefour, in our minds, and we bring the viewer, the listeners rather, into our audio drama. I wanted to go, this is going to be a little bit of one-on-one here for a little bit. So pardon the silences that may occur from the others, but feel free to chip in at times if you have something to say. But I wanted to talk to Noah, because Marcy at this point is very drugged up. She's just watched this video. She's in a lot of pain still. Obviously, the drugs are helping. But I wanted to say that, you know, how do you think Marcy sleeps after this whole experience?
I think that, like, depending on how good of the drugs they gave her, she might be either out like a light or she's just tossing and turning, fitful sleep.
I think we gave her sort of the agency to self dose. Obviously those, you know, little button pressers have a sort of limit, but you can control it within certain boundaries. So
yeah, she's not gonna like go ham on it like crazy. I think she is gonna go like in proper moderation. She doesn't want to develop an opiate addiction like some of my other characters did at one point.
Yeah, well, so as she's sort of dozing in and out of sleep, she finds herself under a bright light, and it's loud here too. The lights and the noise are incredibly overwhelming. And I just want you to make right now a dexterity roll, just a dex times 5 roll.
Absolutely. Any modifier from the bright light? Minus?
Nope.
Okay, just straight. Okay. 35 under 60. Success.
Okay, so you hear as this light and this noise, I mean, the noise is sort of like a mixture of music and talking and maybe some like other sort of various electronics. Then among the noise, you hear like a cha-chung, and then it gets louder and louder. And then all of a sudden you hear a great crashing around you, and you realize you can't move. And as the crashing happens, you feel thrashed around. You feel something collide into you, something heavy and round. And as you runs into you, you fall over and you begin spinning and rotating around. And as you spin and rotate around, you are catching at the other end of you know where you are. You're in a bowling lane, but you're on the wrong side. You're a bowling pin. But when you look at the other end of the bowling lane, it's you who's thrown that ball, and you pump your fist because you just got a strike. You knocked down every single pin, and you see yourself go to high five someone who is also you. And as you look, you see that every other person in the bowling alley is you. And every word on the bowling alley is just Marcy, 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 Marcy. So what do you do?
Which you?
Yes.
Great. I think in this state of being, Marcy the pin is just laying on the floor beside herself, sobbing in a sense. And through that, I imagine it's spreading through all the pins where they're all just weeping. But all the other Marcies at the side eating like absolute garbage food are just stuffing and gorging themselves with horrible like bowling alley mozzarella sticks, if they can find any in this dream state. And it's just horrible, a horrible vision of just like them eating, celebrating, drinking, and just like what am I thinking of? Like a dream sequence at like a Hall of Valhalla, but it's celebrating bowling.
Yeah. So as the pin you sort of settles from this rotation of being knocked down, you begin to hear the machinations of the pin return machine and the bowling return machine. But you begin to see sort of this hedonistic orgy of bowling celebration, and you begin to weep, and as these tears begin to spill out of you, they fill the lanes, they fill the gutters, and they begin rushing towards the other Marcies. And then you are in the body of the other Marcies, maybe the one that just threw the ball, and you see this wave of water begin lapping up from the end of the bowling lane, and it begins to slowly flood in, and all of a sudden everything begins to warp and rot, and floorboards begin to creak and break up around you. What do you do?
I think in a state of sheer panic, she is trying to gauge whether she has enough time to grab her ball from the return of the thing where it shoots the ball back out so you can grab it again. And she is like heavily gauging her time, whether she has enough to grab it and run.
Do you think that she would even take time to make that decision?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so go ahead and make a dex check then.
All right.
Unless there's some other skill that you think would be more appropriate. Dexterity seems like the best one.
That's fair. That is a 86 over 60.
That's a total failure. Now, I need you to make a willpower roll.
Fantastic. Oh, that's just a... Oh, wait, no, yeah, it's just power, right?
Yeah, sorry, power roll, not willpower.
That is a 14 under 60.
Okay, so with that success, I'm not going to make you go get your ball, but you run from this running water. You run up towards the more arcade portion, but a part of you is just torn, leaving the lanes, but also torn at the destruction that's happening to the lanes. And I think there's a part of you that realizes that you know, this is from you. You're weeping. Your tears have caused this rush of water, and you're back as the bowling pin. You are being swept along by the tears that you have been shedding, and you begin slicing your way up the lane on the waves of your own tears. What do you do?
I think cresting the wave is just a series of pins that are going to start battering down on people like heavy clubs swung by the ocean of tears.
Excellent. I love the imagery of these bowling pins. Like, it's like when you're in a dream and, you know, things just change sizes instantly. And what were these, you know, small bowling pins at one point as they come back down the lanes, as they crest over these waves, they begin slamming down onto people, onto you, right? You yourself are just destroying you. And every single time they slam down on you, the you that gets, the person you gets thrust down through the floor, and the water begins spilling into the sub-basement of this bowling alley. But it's filling up faster than it's spilling out, but you smash a person, smash a person, smash a person. It's you. It's you. It's you. Blinking lights. Mercy. Mercy. Mercy.
She is just trying to run for... Well, all of she is just trying to run for her life outside of the bowling alley now. Would she find the doors locked? I think in this horror state, probably, right?
As you push through the doors, they open.
Oh.
And you're in the manor.
Ooh. I don't know if she will recognize the manor upon entering, just fleeing the floodgates and just slamming the door behind her. Not even sure if any of the other hers got through. And just seeing the decay of the manor and everything in it, she's just going to slump to the floor, her back against the door, her hands covering the side of her head, pushing her hairline back, and just go, "No. No. No. No, I made it out. No. 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 No."
And as you scream, when you entered, it was when you closed the door, it was silent. The sound of water and electronics and people screaming stopped. As if you were had been transported to a new place. But as you sit there with your back against the door, make an alertness roll.
You've got to be kidding me. A 57 over 50.
So with the 57 over 50, you don't notice as the floor begins to give out underneath you. And it's not like it was where it just opened up in a hole. It begins to sort of tilt and lean. Slowly at first, but then all of a sudden you're sliding down, and it becomes this just conical slide that you were funneled down, and you begin spinning and twirling around this, you know, around the edges of this slide that's opening up. And as you go down, 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 deeper, darker, the smell of the room begins to change, and it's that coppery, rotten, awful smell. And as you go deeper and deeper, eventually you begin hearing, I mean, you're sliding the whole way, but you begin hearing this noise, just this repetitive deep, 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 deep. And right as you begin sliding around the final curve, you see the wall in front of you, but it's way too close. You're going to run into it. And the moment before you're sliding out of control, about to hit this wall, like falling in a dream, you wake up, and it's the beeping of your little O2 sensor, and your O2 just dipped just low enough, because sometimes when you're on opiates, you know, your breathing shallows out a little bit.
Yeah.
So nurse comes by to rouse you. You okay?
No, I'm not.
Okay, can I get you anything?
Where's my phone?
And she like ruffles through your stuff and grabs your phone and hands it to you. It's 4:30 a.m.
Seeing that, she's just going to like think of like the last moment she remembered. Is Cyril still in the room? Or is he gone?
Yeah, he stayed the night with you.
Okay. I think she's just gonna look to Cyril. Is he asleep?
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna flip a coin to see whether she thinks she needs to wake him up right now or not. If that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
One I do, two I don't. One. She's just gonna gesture for the nurse. Can you wake him up gently?
And that's where we'll cut over to Joel. Joel, you have pulled out. You've been in front of the banner now for a little bit. It's getting late. And I mean, out of nowhere, like you thought you were kind of paying attention, but I don't know. Were you trying to get some sleep, or were you trying to keep watch? What were you trying to do?
I think he would keep watch for a couple of hours and then not meaning to fall asleep.
Okay, well, it's at some point when you're trying to keep watch, like kind of out of nowhere, you get a tap on your window. Just that little.
Yeah, he's oh god, looks over
and leaning into, you know, the window is the face of Detective Marr, and he points, you know, roll down.
Shh. Hello, Detective.
You really need to get that window fixed. It should not make that sound, that noise.
Sorry, that was not me rolling down the window. That was him like ooh, like breathing like oh fuck. Kind of.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's a space window.
That's all right. Make an alertness roll.
Alertness roll.
Yep. So for something that you may or not.
I love it when I open my window and it goes like.
It goes. It sounds like glass grinding on metal.
Ooh. Failure. 82 over 40.
Okay. So you just, you know, he's bent over. He's got a little flashlight in your face. I imagine this is not the first time that you've been pulled over by the police like this. So.
Definitely not.
So, you decided to come back here?
Yeah, we left stuff here.
Well, you mind giving me a little tour?
Oh, shit.
Kind of do, actually, officer. It's not my house. I can't just bring you in.
And he says, you had no problem coming in here earlier, so.
Yeah, because we were going to.
He's a vampire.
Yeah. Oh no, it all comes back. we were given permission to come in, and I don't want to be a pain in the ass to you, but like the mayor's got to give you permission.
And he says, "Well, thanks for letting me in." And as you look around, you're in the manor with him in the entryway. So could you walk me through what you said you found some notes, right? Could you tell me a little bit more about those?
Joel will just like spin in circles, like just kind of looking every which way.
Make a power roll.
A power roll? All right.
Yeah.
Failure again, 85 over 70.
Okay. You are going to tell him everything that happened.
Yeah. He like looks around. Is the hole in the ground still there?
Yeah, it's exactly as you remember it.
Yeah, there's, he points to the corner where the first note was. In that picture frame, there's one in the piano, and there was one in a book.
And as you say that, you see that he is holding the notes, and he's looking through them, and he's like, yeah, these are not very, I don't know, the handwriting's all wrong in these. I'll have to try and get these analyzed, but this and you see him scratch at the ink with his fingernail, and he gets like a bit of the ink under his fingernail, and then he touches it to his tongue, and he looks at you and he says, yeah, these are written in blood. Not her blood, yours. And you're in the room with the piano, and he says, could you show me what was in here?
In the piano?
Yes, show me, Joel.
Yeah, and he'll lift the lid of the piano.
And as you lift the lid of the piano, a rat comes out, and then another, and then another, and then they're crawling over the sides, and then there's a flood. There's just a flood of rats that begin filling up the room. Detective Marr is just standing there with his flashlight on the rats, and he looks at you and he's like, "Rats, huh?
Not this many.
Wow. They're filling up to your knees."
He's like panicking, like, "What? You're just not gonna do anything?"
Says, "I don't have enough bullets."
Joel will try to wade through them back to the front door.
Okay, make a strength check.
Right. I got a critical success, 11 under 65.
Awesome. So you begin pushing through these rats as the number of rats all of a sudden it's just like over your face, like you've been sinking into a pile of rats, but you manage to push your way back out into the main wing and then into the east part of the house where you had seen the bookshelves. You push your way out of the rats and fall into that room. And the detective's there, and he's looking down at the note that got apparated onto the walls, and he's touching the ink that it's written in. And he does the same thing where he rubs the ink with his finger and then puts it to his tongue, and he says, this is fresher, this blood. Hang on, Joel. And he comes over to you, and he pulls out a knife, and he slices through your hand. He grabs part of your hand and just, like, into your palm, he just drives it, and then he sticks his finger into that blood and licks it, and he says, yeah, this was probably written, I don't know, 3 days ago, 4 days ago. Tell me what else you saw here.
What is wrong with you? What you can just tell this, what do you mean it's my blood? This doesn't make any sense.
And he begins rifling through the notebooks, and he's just like, there might be something in here. He shows you the notebook, but when he goes to show you it, like, it looks... There's something in the notebook, but you can't read it. Like, it's incomprehensible.
Is it the book that the ghost threw at Marcy?
It might be.
Or is it his notebook?
No, it's one of the books that was in the room, but you can't tell if it's the one that was thrown or what.
I'll yell out, like, just quick on his feet. It's like, Marguerite, I have a friend, new friend to play with. Come on.
And he says, I don't think she's here right now. Tell me what else happened.
What do you mean you don't think she's here right now? How do you know that she's here? And, like, suddenly he just, like, is at the hole.
Yeah.
And Marcy fell down here.
And he says, like this, and he pushes you, and you fall down the hole. And then you're just on the wet bar. Nothing. You don't feel like you're in pain or anything. And then he's there behind the bar. He says, good thing she missed those stools, huh?
Yeah, good thing she missed
those. He says, there's something else that happened here. You're missing something.
Yeah, there's a smell.
Smell. Yeah. You were talking about the smell. Tell me what the smell was, Joel.
I don't know. I never smelt it. I never came down here. I don't know what's past the hole. She said blood?
Joel, if you never came down here, then what's that? And he points, and you see yourself, your own self, your body, but it's lolling. Your mouth is lolling open, and you're cold and gray, and you look exsanguinated.
It's me? Me. That's me. That's body. Body.
Body? That's you, Joel. You've been here for 3 days.
I haven't. I was at home.
That's where all the blood came from.
Oh no, I was at home. That's not possible. I was only here last night and a little bit the day before. I was at home during the hurricane. I wasn't here. There was no one here. No one could be here.
He pulls out his nightstick and begins tapping on the bar. He says, "That's you, Joel. You've been here the whole time." And as he does that, you see this fire in his eyes, and he says, "You've been here the whole time, Joel. This is where you belong." And that tapping just gets louder and louder and louder until you wake up. And that tapping is Detective Marr tapping on your window.
Jesus Christ, what the fuck? He'll roll down the window. Oh.
Hey, Joel, you said to come back here?
Oh, God. Yeah, we have stuff here.
Okay, well,
what? Why are you here?
Well, listen. I overheard Cyril and y'all talking about certain smells in this house. And I gotta look into that, right? You know I have to look into that, right?
Yeah, I know. I get it.
It could be a wild animal. It could be, you know, a squatter. Whatever it is, that's what police do, right?
Yeah. You have a warrant, I assume?
No, but I can call the mayor. He said I'm good to look, so.
Fine. I mean, you want me to go with you?
No. You stay here just in case it is a wild animal. I don't want to put a civilian at risk.
Detective, I don't know if you should go in alone.
What do you mean?
Just, I don't know. Isn't it like protocol? You don't go in alone?
I mean, that's a nice thought in Boy Scouts and towns with a fully staffed police department, but it's basically a welfare check.
Right.
Y'all didn't see any wild animals, so it's likely nothing, but
I mean, we saw rats, but yeah.
Yeah, I can handle my way around some rats. You get some rest.
I think I rested enough. I'll appreciate it, Detective. Just be safe and try not to knock over any equipment you see.
Sure, I'll be careful. All right.
Oh, good. Also, if this is going to sound really weird. If you see a little girl, it's a part of the act. Don't interact with it.
He gives you a very quizzical look and says, sure thing.
We've gotten real good props. He'll roll up the window.
And as you roll up the window and settle back down, you just sort of hear in the distance the door open and close.
What time is it that I wake up?
Oh, it's about. If he would have come before midnight, so probably 11:30, close to midnight.
I was gonna, he'll stay up the rest of the night. I think he's too on edge, both from the dream and then this.
Yeah. So, Cyril, you, as you doze off, I think, how is your sleep quality usually?
Cyril sleeps like a baby most nights.
Okay.
Or he sleeps very well. A baby sleeps terribly. That's a terrible analogy.
I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
Our firstborn was an angel sleeper. But does he ever have dreams of the war?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay. This one kind of starts. I mean, you've had this dream enough that you recognize early on that you're dreaming, unlike the other two who may have taken a little bit longer. But you're back. You're overseas. You're in Iraq,
either Iraq or Afghanistan. I think he did probably Afghanistan.
Okay, so you're back in Afghanistan. You're in a cornered position with the rest of your squad. Mm-hmm. You've just barricaded yourselves inside this building, this house, maybe. There's occasional gunshots on your position. But every time you find, you turn to find a place to sit or stand, there's another gunshot. There's stairs going up. There's like a kitchen area. There's lots of sort of places to go. Where do you go in this dream?
I think he would walk back to the kitchen area.
Okay.
He generally tried to avoid all any task that would involve him actually having to do anything military.
Yeah, and the rest of your squad, you know, who are barricading the door and then sort of sweeping corners and all that sort of stuff. In this dream, you are not doing any of that. You just sort of barge through the door into this kitchen, and you know, it's very modest kitchen, small pantry, mm-hmm. Little stove, a couple pots and pans. What do you want to do?
I think Cyril goes and he goes to the pantry and he opens up the pantry to try to just find like a trail snack, if you will. You know, they've probably done this multiple times, and usually when they barricade, he tries to find something to eat.
Yeah, you find you think that they might be potato chips based off the brand. I don't know how much Arabic you've picked up, but
almost none.
Maybe based off what little, you know, you've seen, this kind of looks like maybe that's a potato on the front. Sure. And you pop it open and begin eating.
Yeah.
The sounds of violence become louder. And the rest of your squadron is yelling and screaming out like positions, like tactical things that don't really make sense for, essentially they're all like crammed up against the door, just trying to prevent things from coming in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that he, being ever the vigilant photographer, would like eat some chips, kind of look around, and then he would try to photograph the people at the door as kind of a, you know, maybe a Pulitzer Prize winning kind of photo. Yeah.
As you pull your camera, as you depress the shutter, a shot rings out and blood begins spurting from one of your squad mates' neck, and you feel the camera recoil towards you. Actually, make a firearms roll, I realize.
Oh boy.
Let's retcon that just a little bit.
56 over 50, so that's a failure.
Okay, so when you depress the shutter, you still feel the recoil, but you just see part of the door explode outwards, just a bullet hole.
Oh boy.
Which has come from you. And when that happens, all of your squad looks at you in shock, just screaming and yelling, "What are you doing? Soldier, what was that?"
I'm so sorry, y'all. I didn't mean to do that. My bad. I'll just put the camera down.
They are abandoning the door, and they are coming towards you, hands outstretched, beginning to grasp at you.
Oh. I'm very sorry. I did not mean to do that. That was a complete accident. I don't know what happened on that. And he's like backing
check.
Up, trying to like keep his distance because okay. he know.
Or you could do unarmed combat too.
Well, he knows that he's not going to be able to contend with these people physically, so he's going to try to like persuade them that he didn't mean to do what he did. So, do you want dexterity or do you want something else? I could do dexterity.
Okay, so that's fine. You could do dexterity, or I'm trying to think what would be a good thing here. If you're trying to like persuade them, I guess. Keep in mind, this is a dream.
Right. I think I'll just roll dexterity. I think it's clamp close quarters and they're all coming at me at once, so.
Sounds good.
41 under 75, so that's a success.
Okay, so maybe you had set up sort of on the other side of the table, and as they begin to swarm, they're climbing over the chairs and table to get to you, and you duck under the table and crawl through and get to the other side of them, and then begin sprinting. You can exit the door, or you can go upstairs.
I will run out the front door.
Okay, when you run out the front door, it opens into a bedroom. Maybe it's a bedroom that you were actually in, maybe it wasn't, but when you walk into the room, the door closes behind you, and on the bed there's a woman with her child, And then the closet is kind of at the foot of the bed. And out from the closet steps a grown man with a gun, and he levels it at you. He is an Afghani. What do you do?
I think I would throw my hands up and
okay.
just start spouting off any Arabic phrases I knew.
Okay. He begins yelling at you, saying, why did you take my chips? Why did you take my chips?
In Arabic, or do I understand it?
In English. Yep, in English.
I didn't know those your chips, so I'm so sorry. You want some MREs? I got all kinds of stuff here.
He says, you have to give me my chips. Give them back to me.
They're downstairs in the kitchen.
Walking towards
they're downstairs in the kitchen. You can go down there and get them yourself. I just had a couple. I didn't realize they were I knew they were someone else's chips, but I figured nobody mind. And he's got his hands up, and he's just kind of like trying to get this guy to take the gun off of him.
He continues towards you with the gun leveled at you. And he, as he gets close to you, he sticks his hand into your mouth and begins trying to like force his hand down your throat.
And he's just kind of choking. Yeah.
After an uncomfortable minute of this, unless you react to him or do something, he pulls the potato chips out from your stomach. And then he puts the gun up to his head and pulls the trigger. And when he does, a photo comes out and he hands it to you. And he says, this is for you.
Cyril would take the photo.
You look at it, it's like a, Polaroid,
yeah.
Right? So it's just beginning to develop. Maybe you shake it a little bit because
that's what Outcast says.
I don't know if that actually, yep. And as you do, the film develops, and you see you're from your angle, from looking in the room, from where you're standing, on the bed, the woman is laying on the bed. She's covered in blood. The child is crying. She's at this woman's side, at her mother's side. She's crying. And you recognize that child is Marguerite.
Oh, shit.
But then as it continues to develop, you see standing over, floating over her is another form. It's still Marguerite, but she's a ghost child. Mm. And then as you're shaking this, you shake it and shake it and shake it. And then all of a sudden you're shaking, and you wake up, and it's the nurse gently shaking you awake, saying, Hey, your friend wanted to talk to you.
I think he shoots up out of the chair and goes, Marguerite, and just kind of like makes everyone back up in the room as he's standing there, like freaking out.
And that's where we're going to end this session.
Fuck me.
Hell yeah.
Thank you once again for tuning in to Chaos Springs Eternal. This has been Season 1 City of Woe. This is Episode 8 now. We're coming up on double digits. And by the way, we recorded 10 and 11 last night, and they are bangers. I mean, I think all of these episodes are good. This one, I think, has been my favorite so far. But episodes 10 and 11, they open up a little bit more of the mythology that's going around here. Maybe mythology is the wrong word, but a little more of the story and things that are happening. And so I hope that you're enjoying this. Leave some feedback. It's on iTunes. Shoot us an email at quartermasterthetabletop@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter, Instagram. I think we have TikTok now. Check the show notes for all of that. Shout out again for Mark for making some of these audio clips and posting them on Instagram as reels. Make sure you're liking those. Share those with your friends and family. One of those like did pretty good numbers the other week. So anyways, I'm just rambling at this point. But thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.